Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Finland. Welcome to Jyväskylä. I'm the Elisa. So Elisa Heimovaara from the Faculty of Education and Psychology. You've met my namesake, Elisa Pratesi, already, I think. I'm here today to talk about academic practices, covering for my colleague Nina Ormshaw from the ICT faculty. And I have a lot of stuff to go through with you. Never mind. These slides will be available to you and this will be recorded, right? Yes. Also, the recording will be available later on the website so you can get back to it. We have also included the links to the instructions pages of the university so it will be easier for you to find more information when you need. Right. So today I'm going to talk a few words about the basics regarding academic practices here in our university, then about planning your studies and registering for courses. This is closely connected to information about the SISU software, but you have a separate session today, later on
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, sorry, tomorrow about this. Modes of study about assignments, examinations, a few words about the grading system in our university, and then about contacting the staff. And at the end, we have a few minutes, hopefully, for questions and comments. So, to begin with, I would like to point out something that might be a little bit different from your home countries or countries of studies. Bachelor's and master's degree students are considered to be undergraduate in Finland, in the Finnish system. So, this has a relevance for you because when you are searching for information and instructions for your studies on the university web pages, you will find that info under instructions for basic degree students. Okay. And then after your master's, you can do a licentiate, even though this has become more or less obsolete nowadays, and then a doctoral degree. But you should look for information regarding basic degree students, bachelor's and master's, especially master's, because I as well master's level students here. Okay, let's wait for people to get settled. Finland, as most of the European Union countries, is using the ECTS credit system, so European Credit Transfer System. And our university has defined that one ECTS credit equals to 27 hours of work. Okay? This means this 27 hours of work includes everything you do for your studies. So it does not mean, 27 hours of contact teaching. It can include contact teaching, it can include preparing for the examination or so reading literature, writing an assignment, sitting the examination, group work, pair work, whatever. So one academic year consists of 60 ECTS credits and one semester 30 credits, because our academic year is divided into two semesters.
Our online participants say that they cannot hear us for some reason, even though we didn't change the settings. Can we just try the other microphone?
Yeah, you can try with this one.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I'll just switch this one off. This is difficult with this microphone because I can't use my hands and I can't talk without using my hands. Can they hear me now online?
Well, someone can. Let's. Yes.
Okay, good. So one academic year consists of 60 ECTS credits, One semester, 30 credits. You can, of course, complete more if you have the time, but that is what is calculated. Okay. And here you can see our academic calendar for this academic year. Autumn semester begins now, and then we have a Christmas break from the 20th of December until the 8th of January. And then we continue with the spring semester. We have also listed the National Bank holidays in autumn. We don't have really that many, just the Independence Day on the 6th of December. If you have friends who go to the University of Applied Sciences in Jyväskylä, you may hear that they have an official autumn holiday, week 42, but that does not apply to our university. So we don't have an official autumn holiday. Okay. It also says that in July, Finland is closed, and you will notice it next summer. July is a traditional holiday month in Finland. You may notice that taking care of some things will be delayed, or it might be a little bit more difficult in July. So my advice to you is to check in late May, early June, that we have received your grades and credits, and you have passed the examinations and stuff, and contact the teachers before midsummer. So Johannes, which next year is 20th of June, because in July it might be quite difficult to get in touch with the teaching staff members. So to begin with, how to plan your studies? You are going to use SISU for that, and as said, you will have more information about the SISU program tomorrow as part of the orientation program. So SISU is a piece of software that we are using for planning the studies and also keeping score on the credits and the grades that you have completed. You will find the course descriptions in SISU, as well as the timetables and locations if you have contact teaching courses. You can also get an official transcript of records digitally signed from SISU, as well as a certificate of registration if you need it to prove your student status before you get the student card. It's important that you keep your personal information, contact information up to date in SISU, because we are also using it for communicating with you sometimes. There is a message function, and some of the teachers like to inform students about possible changes in venues and timetables by using the SISU message function. If you have difficulties, technical difficulties with SISU or computers or credentials in general, please contact the digital services and SISU support, especially for SISU-related problems. They are using the Help JYU portal for that. And you can see more information on the web pages that I have been linking here. So you should do your personal study plan in SISU. For each and every master's degree program, there is a template. So when you sign in and log on to SISU, you can see a ready-made template for your program there. It's sort of automatic based on your study right. And the compulsory courses of the program, such as master thesis, for example, is included already in the template. However, there is a lot of, in most of our programs, there is quite a lot of room for elective studies and options. So you can, for example, choose either course A or course B. And that is something that you will have to do by yourself. I mean, you have to plan in CECL what you want to do. Once again, when you meet your program coordinators on Thursday or other days, depending on your program and the timetables, you can ask them what exactly you are supposed to do and how to plan your studies, how to compose your study plan in CECL. In addition to the courses provided by your own faculty or department or master's program, you can also choose optional courses from other departments, but please note that there are some restrictions regarding the participation. Center for Multilingual Academic Communication offers courses in various languages and academic communication, highly recommended. And in most of the programs, there are some compulsory language courses, language and communication courses as part of the template. So you can sort of modify, tailor-make your own study plan to suit your personal interests and even your future career plans to an extent. Depending on what you plan to do and what your interests are. CECL is also great, and the study plan in CECL is very good for keeping an eye and keeping track on which courses you have completed and whether you have received the grades for the courses completed. I would like to point out that it's a good idea to check CECL and the progress of your studies and whether you have received the grades quite regularly, because sometimes there are technical hitches or something the teacher has not transferred the grades, and it's always easier to solve the problems quite soon after the fact rather than waiting for several months and then let alone years. And then trying to remember what was going on. Okay. The information regarding the courses can be found in CECL. We have basic information such as the title of the course for each and every one, each and every course of our university available in English. But please notice that does not mean that the course is actually taught in English. So please check the language of learning in CECL, whether there are some course-specific or subject-specific restrictions. These are quite common in, for example, Jyväskylä School of Business and Economics, as well as in my faculty, so Education and Psychology. Which level the course is on, you can see it from the course code. If there are any prerequisites regarding your participation in that course. And then something else, we may have a course that is actually taught in Finnish, but might be available as an independent study option in English. Okay, and here are the lists regarding the courses in English and study guides and everything. Okay. And then how to tell which level the course is on? Course code, as I said. So the first three digits of the code usually tell you which subject we are talking about, which discipline. Here are a couple of examples, like PSY stands for psychology. And then the fourth credit, fourth digit, tells you the level. And here is the key for understanding the levels. We have P for basic studies, so usually first year studies, then A for second and third year bachelor studies, S for master's level studies, and J for doctoral level studies. Okay. You might see something else like an O, for example, and they are usually part of the orientation to the program. So it could be something like introduction to university studies. Okay. Any questions about this? Yeah. Okay. Then registering for courses. Once again, Sisu. And this is something that you should probably pay attention to and ask your coordinators about if need be. The curriculum of our university is currently for 4 years, so 24 to 28, but the actual teaching program, so when the courses are taught and when they are available, is something that is decided every year. So when you meet your program coordinator and they are talking about your studies, you should pay attention to when the master's program courses are available, because it's possible that some of the courses are only available this year and not next year. So they are organized out on, you know, in alternate years, academic years. So if you want especially to choose a specific course, which might be an, you know, elective studies or optional course, it might not be available next year. So if you want to choose it, you might want to do it this year. Completion method is a bit strange expression. It's Sisu language. It means that one course might have several ways, several methods of completion. So it might be possible to have it as a book examination, it might be possible to have it as an contact teaching course. So you will check which completion methods are available each semester, and then you will register for that. Please note that there might be also a separate registration for exams and demos if you have a course with lectures plus demos. But this is once again something that you will have a better understanding about after tomorrow's presentation about Sisu and after having met with your master's program coordinators. And one thing that is quite important, at least from my administrative point of view, if you change your plans and you decide that, okay, I won't take this course, please cancel your registration. It's possible that the number of participants is restricted, so we might have kind of like a queuing list, a waiting list for a course. So if you decide to drop a course, please cancel your registration. Okay. When to register? Okay. When you have your university credentials fully functioning, but please note that the courses have registration periods, and some of them, I know at least from my faculty, that not all of the courses are active for registration in CISO yet. Because quite often we want to meet you first and give you instructions regarding what is expected from you the first semester or the first academic year. And then after that, we just open the courses for registration. You can find these periods and also deadlines for registration in CISO in the completion methods tabs. And here are also instructions on how to do this. Once again, more information tomorrow and from your program coordinators. But remember to include the courses in your study plan and do the registration via your study plan. Okay. Another thing that is good to notice is that we don't hand out ready-made schedules, ready-made timetables for you to follow. You need to check. You need to Compose your study plan, register for courses, and follow the timetable by yourself. Usually, the first session of each course is very important because practical information regarding the completion of course and the requirements are presented in the first session. We usually begin at 15:15. We have this funny tradition of having an academic quarter. So usually the lectures begin at 15:15 and finish at 1:15, being 90 minutes of length. So 2:15 to 3:45 would be a typical timing. In the mornings, it might be 8:30 as opposed to 8:15, but it's good to check with the teacher if in doubt. Also, the requirement for presence or absence or the permission to be absent differ quite heavily depending on the course and depending on the discipline. For example, in our faculty, educational psychology, you are usually expected to be present. So if there is contact teaching, you have to be there. But in some other faculties, they have other practices. So check with the lecturer. We have a wide variety of teaching methods, as well as class sizes. It can be anything from just about 10 people to 400 people, and anything from intensive seminars to huge mass lectures. So check it with the coordinator and with the teachers. As such, it can have contact teaching, which can be lectures or seminars or demonstrations or whatnot. But we also have courses that can be completed by independent study only. And if it is independent study only, it really means that you don't have any contact teaching. Independent study option can be, reading certain material, books, articles, research reports, and then writing an assignment on them or sitting an exam on them, like that. And here is a list of what we have. We have seminars, demos, laboratory work, practical work, presentation, group work, pair work. Once again, a lot of variation depending on your master's program. Completing studies, there was this link about it's like a presentation or introduction to these various forms of studies and assignments. And this is what you can see in CISU if you check your course outline there. You can see the basic information about the course, so objectives, contents, literature quite often. And circled there, you can see the completion methods. And here is a list about the available completion methods for the Integrated Research Communication course. This is from a couple of years ago, but anyway, the basic principle stands. And you can see that this semester, so in autumn 2022, you could have chosen this online teaching or small group teaching or small group teaching. But at the end of the small group teaching and completion methods, there are listed the abbreviations of the various master's degree programs. So, for example, the master's degree program in educational sciences which is the third one from the top, you had small group teaching, but the students from the IS coin programs had online teaching option only. Okay. Sorry, I have a bit of a problem with this building. Written assignments, what to pay attention to. Please note that in written assignments, academic writing traditions, there are differences depending on your study culture. And by study culture, I mean not only the country of origin or the country of studies that you are familiar with, but also there is a lot of variation between the disciplines. So the writing culture in humanities and social sciences is different than the writing culture in mathematics and science. So these differences can be seen in the structure, style, and referencing practices. And it's important to be aware of your own background in academic writing. And well, basically, there are instructions for that, but it's good to ask from the teacher what sort of referencing they prefer, for example. Actually, they are supposed to give you instructions during the first session of a course or include these instructions in the Moodle platform of the course. But if they forget to do that, you can always ask, okay? Usually nowadays, the written assignments are submitted to the Moodle platform, but other methods, other platforms such as Teams are also used. I think at least in our faculty, we still have a couple of old timers who prefer having the assignments submitted by email, but I don't think we have anyone who insists on, hard copies, papers anymore. I hope so. Okay. Check deadlines. Some of our professors are really strict about deadlines, others are more flexible, but once again, based on my experience here, first as a student and then as a staff member, I'd say when you plan your studies, remember that you actually need quite a lot of time for your independent study. So don't fill in your timetable with a lot of contact teaching, at least not without planning for the actual amount of time needed for the written assignments and preparing for the exams and reading the materials. So try to submit everything by the deadlines. It will also ensure that you will get your grades and credits on time. Okay, because usually the teachers plan that, okay, if I put the submission date of this written assignment to the 15th of November, I will reserve that week for grading the papers or the next week for grading the papers. So if you submit your assignment like 21st of December, the teacher will not necessarily have the time to read and grade it until sometime next year. Okay. Misconduct. Not well, I hope you will not encounter this one in close detail, but academic misconduct is something that we take very seriously here. And misconduct can consist of, or it can mean several different things, like cheating. And cheating is, talking with your fellow student during an examination can be taken as cheating. So pay attention to that if and when you sit next to each other, close to each other on examinations, copying an assignment. This is surprisingly common. Some students decide to submit an assignment that has been borrowed from a fellow student from a previous year. And please notice that also the student who gives the assignment for their friend to be submitted is guilty of fraud, is guilty of academic misconduct. Also, you are not allowed to sit an examination for someone else. And for those of you, at least when you are doing your master's thesis, you are doing empirical research, and in mathematics and science faculty, when you are doing laboratory work, if you fabricate your measurements or other research findings, that's also academic fraud, okay? Plagiarism specifically means copying someone else's work and submitting it as your own. And this is something that some of our students are guilty of, not because they intend to plagiarize somebody's work, but because they don't know how to properly reference. Okay. So the main point is that the reader must always know whether this is something that you have thought by yourselves or whether this is something that you have actually read somewhere and you are kind of borrowing somebody else's thinking and ideas. So references and the style of referencing, the style of citation can vary from program to program, discipline to discipline. So if in doubt, ask the teacher. For example, in my faculty, we quite often use the APA referencing system, but in some other faculties, it can be something else. Here are links to more information, more detailed information about the code of conduct of our university regarding academic misconduct. So when you have time, please read them carefully. It will help you in the long run. Plagiarism detection software, at the moment it's called Turnitin, is used. So it is comparing your written assignment to the existing material in the database, but also online on the internet. So quite often, you are quite quickly, or the students are quite quickly caught if they plagiarize something. Artificial intelligence, well, this is something that is relatively new. Actually, just last year in 2023, our university published its first general guideline for the use of artificial intelligence applications. And I think this slide summarizes the main points quite nicely. It's good to notice that the use of artificial intelligence is not forbidden. You can use it, but you can only use it in specific cases and in specific ways. So don't submit anything which is sort of the ready-made product of an artificial intelligence application, but you can use it for, the first drafts, or how to define your research question, or where to find more information. But you have to mention that you have used artificial intelligence. It's good to remember that it is not a scientific source. So you should always refer to the original sources. You are responsible for the assignments for the text you submit. So if ChatGPT makes a mistake and says something entirely, idiotic, you are still responsible for that. And you can always you should always check that from the teacher what their personal preference regarding the use of AI is. That's it. Exams. So we can have either written assignments or examinations, and there is a lot of variation once again from program to program, faculty to faculty, discipline to discipline. So if you have exams, you can sit the exams again. So you can retake the exams. You can try to get a better grade. But please notice that if you have attempted twice and failed, or if you have registered for the exam and not shown up, you have to consult the teacher whether you can take the exam again. Another thing that is worth noticing is that especially some of the compulsory courses that are taken by dozens and dozens of students, it creates kind of a big demand for the coursework at the library. Even though nowadays the majority of the books are in e-book format, so digital versions, they still may have a limitation of how many books can be, loaned out at any given moment because of the licenses. So plan ahead. Okay. We have lecture exams, which are usually sort of part of the course, can be about the lectures given in the course or lectures plus reading materials. And usually they are sort of included in the timetable of the course. Sometimes you might need to register separately in CISU for the exam, sometimes not. It's like sort of the last time of the course is the examination. But check on CISU and check from the teacher if in doubt. Then there are the book exams, which can be part of the course with contact teaching or then this independent study option. And book exams are either organized in our e-examination system or then on Moodle. Do we have a presentation about e-exam as part of orientation? No. Okay. Briefly, in a nutshell, e-exam examinations are taken on campus. Two exam rooms, one near the library, one in Agora building, open from morning till evening. You book your time slot, you go there, you sit the examination, and that's that. Very brief, eh? Okay. More information included here, as well as the link for the e-exam guide. General exams nowadays exist only in three faculties: information technology, mathematics and science, and School of Business and Economics. Take place once a month. You need to register in advance. And for each examination date, there is a list of available exams that you will see on the web pages of the faculty and CISU. Our grading scale goes from 0 to 5, 0 being fail. So 1 is the lowest possible pass grade in our system. And here in the chart, you can see the sort of conversion scale from our scale to the ECTS grading scale, which many of you who have studied in European Union country universities are familiar with. In our transcript of records, you can only see the courses that you have passed. So the courses that you have failed or you decided to drop do not show in your transcript. It's perhaps also worth noticing that if you resit the exam or resubmit your written assignment in order to get a better grade, this will not have any effect on your grade, meaning that if you don't pass the exam on the first time, does not mean that automatically the second time you would get a worse grade because of a reset. So it does not affect you. Another thing is that if everyone in the course is doing really well, they can all get a 5, so excellent grade. We don't use the bell curve. We don't use the normal distribution. And funnily enough, we don't have any university level assessment criteria, which would actually be pretty difficult because the disciplines are so different. So the faculties have some general guidelines regarding the assessment, but also the teacher should explain, usually during the first meeting, what is expected of you and what are the assessment criteria for this course? So what the teacher expects to see in your final written assignment, for example. Here you can see a snippet from CISU. So the exam results, well, the course grades should be published within 2 weeks after the exam date or the deadline of written assignment submission in CISU. You can see it in your study plan or in the completed credits section in CISU. This is from the study plan. So you can see that there is this basic studies in special education module, and then 5 different individual courses, and then circled there is the grade for this foundations of special education course. And next to it is 5 CR, which means 5 credits. So, and if you go back a little bit, basic studies of in special education, you can see there in green, there is this completed, and then number 4. It means that the entire module of basic studies in special education has been completed, and the general grade average for that module is 4. In the transcript, as I already said, you can see the successfully completed courses in our university, credits and grades, not including the courses that you have failed or skipped. And as I mentioned at the beginning, you can download a transcript of records anytime you like from CISU, and it will be digitally signed. Moving on to contact with staff, you probably have not yet had time to notice that we tend to be pretty informal. In Finland in general, and university especially, perhaps. So there is a very low hierarchy system going on here. We are using, in Finnish, we use the singular sinä, you. To in French, as opposed to the more formal plural form, te or vous. So, and we don't usually, when we are talking to a professor, for example, we don't say Professor Smith, we just hey you, John. Okay? So remember that there is a lot less hierarchy than in many other countries, but we still maintain this sort of respectful way of conduct. So even using the first name, you can still be, polite, and you are expected to be polite. Also, you can contact the professors, teachers directly. You don't need a middleman in between. You are allowed to, you are entitled to have feedback on your performance regarding written assignments and exams. You can ask, what did I do not so perfect with that I got only, grade one or something. At the same time, I would like to remind you that, for example, grade three is actually good, So you don't necessarily need to get fives for every course, The teachers ask for feedback after every course. There is a special online inquiry about that. And teachers usually have office hours, or nowadays, more often, you can book an appointment by email. Some of us in the administration use, for example, Microsoft Booking app for booking meeting times, but teachers less so. If and when you send an email to the teachers or to me, for example, try to be as precise as possible. It's kind of difficult to know what it is about if the title is something like, if the subject is something like hi. And if you send an email saying that, especially if you use your private Gmail or Hotmail account, and it is something like, hi, my name is Mary. I wonder about your course. I'm attending it, but I can't be there, next week. And it's like, okay, I teach five courses and I have like a dozen Marys as my students. So include your full name, first name, and surname as it is written in CISO. Okay. Mention the course your question is about, preferably in the subject field of your email. And try to be as precise as possible in your message. You can also send questions via Moodle if it is about a specific course. But whatever way you decide to contact us, please allow us some time to answer. We usually get a lot of emails, a lot of contact information, how do you call that? Well, anyway, lots of messages, either emails or Moodle or WhatsApp messages. So allow us at least, a couple of days or a week. If it is really urgent, try calling, okay? We are pretty flexible here. Academic freedom is something that has been valued here for forever. But it does not mean that you don't have responsibilities. So we trust you to do your job. Okay? Nobody is going to hunt you down and say that, okay, you didn't submit your written assignment. Why didn't you do so? It's up to you. If you decide not to submit it, you are responsible, not the teachers. Bearing in mind that this may have impact on, for example, your scholarship status and also your, in some cases, your student visa. So try to do your job, ask for help if need be, but remember that the system is pretty flexible. Okay. Here are links to the regulations regarding your studies. I once again advise you to check these when you have the time. There is information about the legislation and then JYU policies, as well as information about the recognition of prior learning. So if you have studied, for example, a lot of research methodology and you think that you don't necessarily need to do it again, you can contact your academic advisor in the faculty and ask if it would be possible to recognize your prior learning in this topic. Okay. Information can be found using these links. I strongly suggest joining also some emailing lists. If you go, sorry, I think it was in here anyway. Yeah. So there are various student organizations and student mailing lists that provide you with information. I recommend you to join them. And then, last but not least, we have a student support system, including goodies, well-being advisors. Remember that if you have difficulties, if you feel overwhelmed, please feel free to contact your goodies and other services by the Student Life Initiative.
All right, thanks a lot to Elisa for this very detailed presentation. And of course, not all information naturally sinking in right now. So later on, please return to the slides and check as this information is going to be crucial for your studies. Now we have time to take just a few questions. So please, if you have a question, raise your hand. I will give you a microphone.
Hello. I wanted to ask, in CSU, are the time slots also shown for different subjects? And if there are, then are they also followed or can they change in between the semester? Because obviously when we're scheduling, so we need to see whether it's overlapping with other schedules or not.
Yes, in CSU, the timetables are available. Usually they don't change during the semester, at least not by much, but all, of course it's possible that, for example, the teacher falls ill and has to postpone their teaching or something else happens. But usually they are published at the beginning of the semester and remain more or less so for the entire duration of the course.
Excellent. All right. Okay, one question over there.
I wanted to ask about the website on the English courses and there were courses of the bachelor's degree and the master's degree. For the optional courses, can you take the lesson from the bachelor's degree or only of the master's degree from other countries?
In multiple master's degree programs, English medium master's degree programs, the optional credits can be also from bachelor's programs. So they can be bachelor's level studies, yeah.
All right, we'll have a switch in there. There's one in Zoom. Right.
Regarding the optional studies, this is also something that you might want to check with your program. But to the best of my knowledge, the bachelor level studies are okay for A-level programs.
Okay, so the question on Zoom is, suppose if we cancel one of my registered course, then if I'm in a waiting list for another desired course and not getting that course as well, what should we do then?
Oh.
Elisa.
Wow, that's a difficult question. If it is a compulsory course in your master's degree program, it is my understanding that the programs organize the courses so that all the master's degree program students in that program have the priority to their compulsory courses. If we are talking about elective studies, then depending on the teacher, depending on the course, there are various ways of organizing the preference list or priority list of students. In most cases, the programs, the disciplines give priority to their own students. And then it might be that, the older students get priority or it's first come, first serve basis. But for the compulsory courses, I don't think you should encounter problems because the programs organize it so that compulsory courses can be taken by all the official students of the program.
All right, thanks a lot to Elisa. Let's give a round of applause.